Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight, we're going to talk about the 2013 film The Fifth Estate, directed by Bill Condon. And what did Bill Condon also direct?
What did he also direct?
Mr. Holmes.
Oh. I don't know that I would have... I could have paired those two movies, but...
You guys seem to like that plenty.
Yeah. I recall having enjoyed that movie more than I had expected to.
So, this is on your list?
Yeah, because I'd never seen it.
And so, what did you think of it at first blush?
I thought it was a decent movie. It had some problems. I had some problems with it.
Some factual problems, some historical problems, or some acting problems? Or pacing problems?
I didn't really have any acting problems per se. And I was not believing that this was documentary. So there was liberty with the story, obviously. I'm not taking issue with that. My issue is with the story seemed to just have this second plot line running through it that didn't need to be there and didn't add much to the story, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that part of it.
Yeah.
I like this movie. And yes, I don't think, as long as you don't realize it's not a documentary, and even if it was, it's from a very specific perspective. It's based on a book written by the Daniel character.
Yeah.
So, you know, you would think that the real Julian Assange would maybe have quibbles, and he does. Turns out the real Julian Assange is a kind of a weirdo.
As I was telling boyfriend Jesse, he's a loathsome man in real life, seemingly.
He's a great test of the First Amendment because he and like Larry Flint are who the First Amendment is built for.
I said, and I think, you know, to jump right into it, boyfriend Jesse and I were discussing, and I said, I think he's a reprehensible human being. I applaud the sentiment of what he's trying to accomplish. However, I don't necessarily agree with the mechanism to which he has used and the fact that he has endangered and risked innocent people's lives. And he would tell you that they aren't so innocent. And I don't believe that's his call to make and out those people. So that's my problem on the outset with him as a person. Divorcing that from this movie... this movie certainly doesn't do him any favors either.
Well, yeah, we're going to have a longer discussion about whistleblowing and journalism and the First Amendment. Hopefully we'll have a vibrant discussion about it. I don't think we're going to be having a lot of disagreement with one another, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see that happening, but.
Oh, actually, sorry. But before we jump into the movie, I do have basically one note, and the note is that I don't know why it took me so long to get on the Benedict Cumberbatch bandwagon. I think it's because his name turns me off. But why hasn't he won every award for everything?
Well, because he's goofy. But
he's amazing in this movie.
So here's where my age is showing. Did we review Imitation Game or not?
Nope.
So That's a great movie. And he plays Alan Turing.
So. I know him as Dr. Strange.
Yeah, that's not a good representation.
Well, now I know.
Have you seen the British BBC Sherlock Holmes?
I have not.
Also a great performance.
Yeah, I had no idea. I mean, I've heard about him, of course, because the women find him attractive, and he has a ridiculous name. That's all I know.
Perhaps. But no, I like him rather a lot. I find him compelling as an actor. I don't think he's reprehensible as a human, but I don't know that for sure.
Wait, you think he has reprehensibility?
No, I don't think he is.
Oh, I don't think so. I've only heard nice things.
Well, yeah, but you never know. I mean, you know, you hear nice things about Chris Hardwick, and then it turns out he's, you know, so you just can't tell anymore.
Don't trust fat guys who got skinny.
Did you not see the new Star Trek?
No. Well, yes.
Because he plays Khan.
Well, I did not see that one.
Oh, all right. Also, he plays Satan in Good Omens, which I watched the first episode of tonight.
Is it available now?
Yes, it is.
I can't wait. So, all right. So,
by the way, the first episode is amazing.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So here are movies that he's been in. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, which we've talked about. Mm-hmm. He was in War Horse. He was in The Other Boleyn Girl. He was in Atonement, none of which I've seen. He was in The Hobbit. He was in A Girlfriend in a Coma, Star Trek Into Darkness, 12 Years a Slave, More Hobbits. He was in August Osage County, Imitation Game, More Hobbit, Black Mass, Zoolander 2, Doctor Strange, which I have seen. He was in Thor Ragnarok as a cameo. And, of course, Infinity War, again, Doctor Strange. He was a voice in The Grinch. And he was in lots of television, including Tipping the Velvet, Sherlock, and he has been in the theater and on the radio.
Yeah. Doctor Strange, by the way, is awful.
Doctor Strange was fine. It was overly long, I thought. And he was not likable, but that's because he was not supposed to be likable.
Yeah, I had problems with Doctor Strange. Tilda Swinton, really. And I love Tilda Swinton, but...
So,
yeah.
At least the guy gets plenty of work. I like the guy. Like I said, I think he was great. Okay, so back to the actual movie at hand, The Fifth Estate. The Fifth Estate is about WikiLeaks. Plain and simple. And it's about pretty much the beginning to the end of the relevance of WikiLeaks. Is WikiLeaks even a thing anymore?
That's a good question.
I mean, I don't theoretically, know. Right? Because... they contributed documents to the 2016 election. Theoretically, they just come from Assange itself.
Well, it turns out they may have come from Assange himself all along. Their website still exists.
Yeah, excellent. Well.
And you can submit and or donate.
Yeah, that's troublesome. Especially in the job I am in. Again, we'll talk later about how I feel about that sort of things. And plus, I'm fairly limited to what I can explore based on where I work. So that's self-limiting is always good. I need boundaries anyway. The movie opens in 2010 with the release of the Afghan war logs. And then it flashes back to 2007 where journalist Daniel, and I'm going to mess up the name, Daniel Berg pretty much, meets Australian computer hacker Julian Assange for the first time.
Yeah, they truncate his name for the movie.
Yes, at the Chaos Communication Congress in Berlin. It's funny. Again, I have kind of a weird desire to visit Berlin.
Yeah.
Even though I don't have any fondness for German history or the language or anything, like I would say for Paris or London or, you know, England, the UK.
So I would love to see Berlin for the Brandenburg Gate, for Checkpoint Charlie Museum. The Berlin Wall Museum. So that's mainly why I would want to go and see Berlin.
No, I just think that Berlin has to be it will bring me back to 1999 UK techno music. Now, this probably is not the case.
Well, in parts of Germany, I'm sure it still is. But
yeah. Maybe where I want to go is Ibiza. But then again, I don't like people. So anyway, they go to this basically a hacker con in Berlin.
A game hacker convention.
Daniel has an interest in online activism, and he wants to meet Assange, who he's been talking with over the emails. And Assange tells him about this WikiLeaks thing, which is a website devoted to releasing information being withheld from the public while retaining anonymity for its sources. The idea is that whistleblowers don't come forward because they're afraid of getting caught and punished. And so this is a completely anonymous, purposefully anonymous website where they can dump information and people can read it and do with it what they will. And the people dumping the information have no fear of reprisal.
In theory.
So their first major target is the private Swiss bank Julius Baer, whose Cayman Island branch has been engaged in illegal activities. I think we saw similar things to like the Panama Papers. It's basically money laundering and tax dodging.
Do we think any Swiss bank is legit, or are they pretty much all just money launderers?
I think all banks do this. I think banks and financial institutions play a game. And I think people with money don't want to pay taxes and or try to hide. You know, people with money want to keep their money. I mean, I'm not a communist or even a socialist, so I get it. I want to keep my money, too.
If I had more money, I'd want to keep all of it, too.
Sure. Yeah.
Hell, if I had any money, I'd want to keep it.
However, again, I don't want to necessarily inject my political beliefs, except that I do believe that if you use services, you should pay for those services.
Yes.
So if I lived in England, I would bitch about taxes, but I would pay my taxes because that's the law, and I would get my benefits because that's also the law.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I do in America anyway. So I'd do that in any place I lived, I'm sure.
Yes.
And I'd bitch about it because we bitch about having to pay for anything. I don't think this is too controversial so far. So Baer filed a lawsuit and got an injunction, but the judge dissolved the injunction, allowing Julian and Daniel to reclaim the domain name WikiLeaks because they were trying to take the domain name and shut them down. And as their confidence increases, the two push forward into publishing information over the next 3 years, including Scientology secrets, Sarah Palin's email account, and the membership of the British National Party. So there's some like Adam McKay level of weird direction in this movie or artistic touches where we learn quickly that even though Assange claims to have this fairly vast number of anonymous hackers helping him, it's really just him and now Daniel. And he corresponds as if he is part of a much bigger organization.
Yeah, he's faking it until he can make it.
Yes. So Daniel is disillusioned by this.
Well, he rightfully says this is fraudulent.
Yeah.
But Julian tries to convince him, like, this is what all startups do. You say you're big until you're big, and then you're big. So then it doesn't matter.
Well, and that has a lot of basis in truth. I mean, Amazon, being one of the biggest companies in the world, didn't make money for a very long time. It was worth money, but it didn't make any money. Same with things like Google and whatnot.
Yeah. There's a line of ethics where you have to kind of examine. An example that I got recently from listening to a podcast was about a construction woman in Louisiana who founded a business after all the hurricane damage and the flooding had gone through, and she had printed up a whole bunch of signs for this. She was basically restoration and demolition services, but she started a company. She didn't have a company. She was just making it. And she would go to people's yards who all they had left was the yard. There was nothing else left. And she says, hey, can I pay you $5 to put my sign up in your yard? And so she just put these signs up advertising. But what it looks like, though, from the outside is her company had come and cleaned up all this land.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But she never said that. She just put the sign up and people just assumed. Yeah. So it's that kind of, you know, I didn't necessarily misrepresent it. I said there were plenty of workers, but I didn't, you know, I didn't say who those workers were. I didn't say they were all me. You know, I didn't say I cleaned up those yards. The yards got cleaned up, but I didn't say that I was the one that did it. But I put my signs up and people assumed so.
The movie makes the point that the fact that Assange is chatting, like he's having conversations with himself online to make it look like there are a lot of people discussing things.
Yes.
So that's more like putting up a sign that said this lot cleared by Honey Yes. Boo Boo.
No, he's very much fraudulent.
Yes.
I mean, it is intentional levels of deception.
Yes.
He isn't a sleight of hand. This is outright, you know, flimflammery.
And Assange is a jerk. I mean, it's alluded that he, people think he's on the autism spectrum because he's very blunt. But he's also, again, maybe he's a good salesman. Maybe it's a fire festival sort of pathological liar kind of salesman thing.
Maybe he's mental.
Maybe he's mental. Maybe it's because he grew up in a cult in Australia. Yeah.
Did they collect buttons?
Maybe it's not collecting, it's trading.
Sorry.
And it's, yeah, again.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the movie makes allusions to that he was abused as a child and he had all kinds of traumatic events growing up and all of that. But still, I'm like, that doesn't justify.
Well, no, and kind of like what they would say in a Parcast, one of the Parcast podcasts. Is, you know, Eric does not have a degree in psychology, but I've read a book. So I'm going to now talk about Julian Assange as if I was a psychologist. So, of course, I'm not going to do that. Again, this movie is a fictionalized account of real events. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't really care. I know of him in real life, what I've seen of him in real life, and I judge that. Independent of this movie, and I just don't think he's a very loathsome person. Seeing him get kicked out of the embassy was a little bit satisfying, although he looked like a sloth.
Of course. Well, so here's the thing. Well, can you imagine living in an embassy for 7 years or whatever? It's crazy.
Well, I guess they hated him too.
Well, of course. Yeah.
There's footage of him like riding a skateboard.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And whoever suggested that that would be a good place for him to stay was like, oh, well, you were so screwed.
The president of Ecuador said he could stay there because they were considering giving him asylum until the president lost election. And then the new president was like, nope, you got to go.
So back to the matter of the movie. And here's where there's a tension because, of course, Daniel comes off as a true believer. And he sees WikiLeaks as a really noble thing, that Assange wants to protect whistleblowers so that they will not get hurt, you know, delivering information that the world needs to know, like a journalistic kind of thing. And Daniel is a journalist, right? Doesn't he work for, like, Der Spiegel or whatever?
Yeah.
So, you know, journalism has ethics. So the Fourth Estate, by the way, this is an allusion to the Fifth Estate refers to like the one past the Fourth Estate. The Fourth Estate is the press. The idea is that all three branches of the government are supposed to protect, like have checks and balances on the other. And the journalism is supposed to basically have a check on everything, like to provide, you know, another useful societal goal. And the Fifth Estate would be the internets or whatever. A more pure thing, blah, blah, blah. Well, Daniel realizes that, okay, so Assange really cares about protecting his sources. Not so much because he cares about the sources themselves, but because that if the sources aren't protected, his website won't continue to exist. Like, if he can't guarantee what he's guaranteeing, it's not going to work out. And he's going to take credit for all this stuff. And if it doesn't work out, it's not going to look good for him. But he doesn't necessarily care about humanity, as evidenced by the fact that they end up getting a shit ton of documents from one Bradley Manning, now known as Chelsea Manning. who gave hundreds of thousands of documents to WikiLeaks, including a video that I think everybody has seen. And if you've seen the movie, you've seen it, where it's the collateral murder strike.
Yeah.
Where they end up killing these journalists. And the official report that these were terrorists or aiding terrorist guys with guns, but they had cameras instead of guns. And so it's very stark. And again, the fact that we don't see a lot of like independent war journalism means that this was a very shocking thing we were seeing. Plus, you have these Afghan and Iraqi war logs and 250,000 diplomatic cables, like emails between diplomats, like personal emails, interdepartmental, intergovernment emails, which turn out to be embarrassing and in some cases dangerous.
Yes, potentially divulging information that, while on its face is not necessarily classified, is easily identifying somebody in a way that even while innocuous, seemingly innocuous, and not naming somebody's name, might clearly identify them anyway, just because of the context.
Sure. And also, some of which is most certainly confidential. What's the word? Like, highly classified. That's what I mean. Classified. These are, in some cases, very highly classified documents.
Sure. That
documents are classified for a reason. So putting them out there just willy-nilly isn't something that even real journalists would do.
Well, there's also a reason why they are sent as cables and not as emails or text messages. Because they're meant to be kept as cables as secure. Exactly. Because cables are secure.
Yes.
Well,
unless you got a guy with a thumb drive with an axe to grind.
Yes. I mean, every system is only as strong as its weakest point, so.
Yeah. Here's where the real tension in the story comes, is that, so you've got Daniel, who is sort of the liaison between WikiLeaks and the journalists.
He translates people into Assange from crazy to people.
Yeah. But he's also concerned about journalism and about fairness and whatnot. So he sees, like, the Afghan war logs, the Iraqi war logs, and, of course, these 250,000 cables as, and these are important. However, as a journalist, you have to redact these. You have to go through it. You have to know what you're doing. You can't just release it without knowing, because if you do release sensitive documents, like, you know, I don't know, military positions and things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's treasonous, actually. You know, that can get you executed. So, in many countries, including ours. So, you know, journalists can't commit treason. However, journalists are in the business of publishing classified documents or leaked documents all the time. The idea is you have an editorial staff who will go through and make sure that they release things that do not actually endanger other people.
Well, that's the hope. Mm-hmm.
And if they do, then, you know, they should expect to be punished. This is a topic that will come up later in our philosophical conversation. So, basically, The Guardian and The New York Times and Der Spiegel... I'm saying that paper right.
Yeah. Spiegel, yes.
Okay, yes. They all agreed to publish these things at the same time as WikiLeaks. But the agreement was to, you know, redact what you had to, including WikiLeaks. But WikiLeaks didn't have the staff or the capability to do that, because it's just Daniel and a couple of other people and Julian, who has no intention of redacting anything. He wants the chips to fall where they may. That's where the big tension in the movie comes, because it's very irresponsible to just dump secret documents out into the world as was done.
By the way, Spiegel is mirror.
Oh, is it? Okay, I did not know that.
Just FYI. It's just one of those things. The mirror.
Good to know.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel is what I would consider to be a pretty true, almost almost total altruist. And Julian is portrayed as slightly altruistic, but mostly self-interested.
Yes. So it is, you know, it, again, if you are a friend of the family of Julian, you are probably thinking this is an unfair portrayal. And if you are Julian Assange, you actually are not happy about this movie because you think it is full of falsehoods meant to paint you in a bad light. But again, if you're Julian Assange, you're used to painting yourself. You're used to being in a bad light anyway. It's unclear whether you have a good light.
Yeah. All that hair dye.
Yes. Well, and that's another thing is that everything about Julian Assange is a lie. Even his white hair. And they did throw the thing about, well, when he was a kid in the cult, they were forced to dye their hair. So that kind of gives it a little bit of makes it a little bit more sympathetic, I guess.
Well, except that why does he keep doing it?
Well, that's what he does. Plus, he gets to lay those things about, well, that's why my hair turned white. Like, why do you think why do you think all my hair went white? Yeah. I like the fact that this movie is a little bit meta at the end. Where he talks like Cumberbatch as Assange talks about how this movie is slanted against him. Again, Bill Condon directed this movie. We also get to see some really fun faces. We get to see Alicia Vikander. We get to see Stanley Tucci and Laura Linney, who are always great. Yeah. Peter Capaldi.
Yeah.
It's great. David Thewlis.
Yeah, there were definitely some fun. There were some fun performances, and there were some good funny parts too, which was good because the movie did have some tense moments. Even knowing where the story was going to end up, I wasn't sure what kind of drama they were brewing up. And, you know, it was decent.
Yeah, I thought it was a fine character piece, and yes. it was thrilling enough to to keep it moving along. I wasn't bored during it. How long was it? 128 minute running time. So it's probably a little on the long side. I guess that's like a standard drama these days. But it was fine. I thought it was interesting. And I thought, David Brule, who I never heard of before, and who was in, he was in the Bourne Ultimatum as Martin Kreutz. He was in Inglourious Basterds. He was in the movie Rush, which I think is about the race car drivers, right?
No idea.
Yeah. He was in, he was Helmut Zemo in Captain America Civil War. He was in The Cloverfield Paradox. So, yeah, he's a good actor. He was very compelling. Any other notes about the movie itself?
I thought it was interesting that the girlfriend accuses him of playing World of Warcraft in the closet.
Yes, I like that.
And she seems to defend him, want to defend him at work, even though he is indefensible.
Oh, yeah. He's stealing company time and resources.
Yeah. And the printing all the jobs on the printer is hilarious, by the way.
Yes. Yes. I like that. Yes. Ostensibly, he's a tech guy, right? He's a like IT guy for the paper. Or is he even – he doesn't even work for paper. Where does he work for? Maybe he's not.
I think he works for the IT department. I thought he worked for the IT department at Der Spiegel.
I thought so too, but maybe not. Somewhere in Germany. It did not do well at the box office. But, you know, there's no sex and violence, so.
Well, there was some sex, but meh.
Yeah. Oh, there was that moment where Julian touched his leg, right? Wasn't that a weird thing that was never brought upon again?
This movie had some weird choices story-wise. The Laura Linney storyline, it didn't add anything to me to the story. It was nice to see her and Stanley Tucci, but the whole drama of getting the guy out and the exposed guy, like they focused on one person and it didn't flow with the rest of the movie. It was like this other story they wanted to tell within this movie, but without much establishment.
Yeah, I mean, it was the tangent that was supposed to tell you how lives are at stake. But the fact that the life wasn't at stake necessarily, I mean, it was at stake, I suppose, but if it was supposed to show consequences, there were some embarrassing consequences that later, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I didn't get it. It was missing something. Maybe it was edited out for length and brevity. Maybe I don't have access to the special features, but to me, that the whole arc of that story was so shallow and empty that it didn't resonate with me, and so that took me really out of the movie. I really liked the performance of Stanley Tucci and Laura Linney, but you could have showed me just that, and I wouldn't have been able to tell you what movie it was.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, they make some references to WikiLeaks, but I mean, it had almost nothing to do with this movie and didn't add anything except a whole bunch of time fill.
And that it did. So I agree there.
The only other note I have is that I don't know if this is attributed to Assange or not, but he had that quote about revolution is the struggle between the past and the future.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't know if that's his or if he stole that from somebody else. I suspect it was stolen from elsewhere, but I don't know.
Sure. Do we believe anything Assange has ever said was original? No.
Well, who knows which Assange? I mean, who knows?
I suppose.
I mean, I don't know. And I really don't know enough about him.
Not me either.
I only know what I've read on Wikipedia, which is, interesting enough, and what I've seen of him on the news, and which lately is not flattering at all. Well, so
that's the thing, is now everybody's got an angle, so how do you know, right?
Yeah, and all the liberal media, who knows I'm even getting the truth. Liberal
media, conservative media, yeah, you don't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
You don't have enough information to form your own opinions, and we all live in like an echo chamber where we only seek out our own opinions. But back to the movie. So, how would you rate this movie?
I would say this is probably a B+ movie. Maybe an A-. It's not an A. I don't think it's an A movie, though.
I'm not even sure it's a B+ movie. I think it's a solid B, though.
Yeah, it's in there somewhere. I dicker back and forth. I liked that. I think it was, first of all, it was another one of those beautiful movies. It was a beautiful movie.
Oh, sure.
Cinematically, I mean, the backdrop and the settings and the cinematography, I really enjoyed that. The story was kind of eh. And then, that weak secondary story arc, which didn't do anything for me. So, I think...
Well, again, 6 years after the fact that when this is very timely.
Yeah, so I'd say, you're right. It's a B, but... I mean, the performances were great, but, I'm not likely to go back and watch this again.
No, I'm glad I watched it once, though. I mean, I think it was, I don't know whether Drew would think it would be worth it, but I think it was worth it to at least see it once. And if nothing else, because the performances were great.
Yeah, and I don't want to understate that. No, I think everybody gave it their all.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody phoned it in. It was a good...
Yeah. So, you want to talk about whistleblowers?
Sure.
Because I do. I wish, one of the thousands of reasons I wish we could talk to our grandmother on the podcast, because her father was involved in the union stuff in Centralia, which, by the way, if you look at the Wobblies and whatever the union... there was an actual fight in Centralia where people were killed and stuff between union and labor, or labor and management. And I don't know enough about the history of it, but one of the things I remember her saying is that her father always told her, never be a whistleblower. It doesn't do you. It won't, it'll never pay off for you. And there's, I think I feel about whistleblowers the same way I feel about Batman. If you commit a crime, you need to be willing to pay for the crime, If you're willing to do what you think is right, stand up for the truth and whatever, you have to accept the consequences of that. If you go on a vigilante attack against whatever, somebody who harmed your family, you may end up going to jail for that vigilante attack. You have to be okay with that if that's what you want to have happen. You can't have it both ways. Chelsea Manning, got a pardon, which was extremely lucky for her, but didn't deserve it necessarily. I mean, I think, you know, there was a lot of stuff that we were, that was not told to us about the Iraq war and the war in Afghanistan. And I think having that information come out was in a lot of ways beneficial, but the fact that he stole government documents and leaked them to foreign powers means he deserved to go to jail for a very long time.
It's treasonous.
Yeah. Edward Snowden needs to go to jail. Yeah. Julian Assange needs to go to jail.
Yeah.
However, it's very interesting. I know Rachel Maddow did a thing earlier this week on the extradition of Julian Assange to America. Did you see any of that?
Mm-mm.
Well, it is unlikely that the Brits are going to extradite him to the U.S. to face the charges here.
Is that because they potentially we'd put him to death?
Not even that necessarily, but because they can send him to Sweden for the rape charges.
Could we put him to death if he's not an American citizen?
Sure. Oh yeah.
Would Australia allow that?
Well, it's not Australia's. It's the UK.
Yeah, but isn't he an Australian citizen?
I don't know, but he's being held by the UK. It's kind of up to the UK what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but I mean, yeah. Anyway. I'm just thinking, I'm going through all the international law, and I'm not a lawyer, so it's amateur, but I'm thinking, you know, Australia, he's a citizen of Australia, they'd want to defend their citizen, even if he was, you know.
They'll try, but
yeah,
a lot depends on where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Ask those people, that guy in North Korea, who was basically executed for stealing a poster. It's bad news. But the thing is, you know, the freedom of the press in the United States is a big deal. And if they charge Julian Assange with some of these things, it could be an attack on all of the freedom of the press. And that is a very serious issue.
I think it's important to parse that I as a citizen, who would want the law upheld. I'm trying to find the right words. If Assange had redacted everything that should have been redacted and just did enough to say, I have 160,000 pages of this garbage that should be embarrassing to you. And, you know, I will release the portions of it that are not going to harm people, but just know that, you know, this data exists and that you're being lied to. That I think I have no problem with journalistically, and from a my own like moral compass standpoint, where I have the problem is where it was endangering other people's lives, because regardless of the motive and the seeming altruism that he was trying to approach, at the point that he puts somebody else in danger, then it ceases to be beneficial. Because the point of a free press is to protect the people.
True. Well, sorta.
Well, but I mean, that's the...
The purpose of the free press is to protect the truth.
Well, but that's with people in mind.
Yeah,
I believe. Yeah. At its heart, I think you're right. The goal is to have unobscured, unobfuscated truth in journalism. But behind that faith and belief is that we want people to be safe and have knowledge. At the point that you're publishing a document that potentially could, I mean, and here's the other side of the debate. You know, you're harming the bank by releasing all of that, and you're harming those people's families. And people are saying, well, they were law-breaking and they were, you know, they were wrongdoing, so they deserved that. Well, again, that's not necessarily for us to decide, though.
Well, but the idea there, though, is that you are, like, if you, like, writing an expose... Like, writing an expose on anything, it's, you know, trying to blow the doors open on any story is going to have consequences. The thing is, you have to make sure that what you write is true and verifiable.
Yes.
And so you have to have sources, and you don't necessarily have to divulge your sources, but you should have sources, multiple sources for your information to prove that you are correct. And you should be able to cite those sources.
Yeah. And that was the other half of the discussion boyfriend Jesse and I were having, is that, you know, I said, well, how can you verify if you don't know where it came from and it's totally de-identified to the point where, like, you don't know who submitted it? How can you possibly verify that it's true and it's not like an assassin piece? You know, it's not some kind of piece that's intended to take somebody out, that may not even be truthful.
Well, and so maybe the Julian Assange idea would be, no, that's why we don't redact anything. You don't edit anything. You put it all out. Let people decide whether it's true or not. If we start editing it, that means we are now editorializing and putting a spin on it. There shouldn't be any spin on it. It should be all just pure document.
Yeah, I don't think verifying validity is editing. Finding if it's truthful or not, I don't think is editing. But
if you edit out the parts, see, if I, noble in spirit and heart, go through a document and say, okay, there's five explosive points in this. Number three will amaze you. And I can verify numbers 1, 2, and 5, but I can't verify 3 and 4 very well. So as, again, for somebody who are pure of heart and honest of spirit or whatever, will tell you 1, 2, and 5. And I will not tell you 3 and 4. Julian Assange will say, well, editing out 3 and 4 means you are making a decision and you are now slanting the story. You're already editing it. You're giving a watered down version of the truth. But it's not the, but you, if you can't confirm that it's the truth, you have to omit it. Sure. But what's the, but now let's say Brother Jay, who is evil of heart and dark of spirit, decides to just say, okay, I'm going to publish just 3 and 5. And not tell you the truth of number 1 or 2, and not tell you about 4, because 4 doesn't serve my purpose. But 3, even though it's non-verifiable, serves my purpose very well. And 5, because it is verifiable, gives legitimacy to 3. It's a logical fallacy, but it's also what you could use to convince yourself that you're being noble of spirit too. What's the difference from the reader? I don't know the difference. I don't have the information that right. Eric and Jason have. So, you know, again, you have to trust the journalists as well. And they need to be taken to court. I mean, if everything Woodward and Bernstein did in All the President's Men, that was all stolen documents and anonymous sources and whatever. But they had to be very careful that they were verifiable so that if they did get into court, they would be on firm ground. And the only reason they're being on firm ground is because the United States Constitution has a very strong First Amendment to allow for that sort of journalism thing.
Yes.
Because other countries don't. And if a paper, a single paper, which is why the 3 different papers decided to release all on the same day, is that was to protect each other. Because, you know, if the president, in this case, the actual president, but if the government has a hard-on for, say, the Washington Post, they can try to do everything to shut down the Washington Post. The only thing the Washington Post will have is a certain amount of megaphone and barrels of ink to write press about how they're being abused, and the fact that they belong to this fellowship of journalists who will protect them. But, you know, if you color outside the lines, and there have been plenty of situations, you know, it's not like all journalism is altruistic. You know, there's plenty of yellow journalism and plenty of slanted stories. And
there's plenty of fake journalism, too. I mean, there's fake stories, too.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah. And some of it are faked by the news organization. Some of it are planted. Some of it are planted by foreign governments trying to meddle in our elections. Number 3 will amaze you.
Go figure.
So,
but no collusion.
I think all of us have access. Well, pretty much anybody who's got a job has access to information that your boss doesn't want to get out. Some of those things are covered by laws that if I divulge some things in my work, and I'm sure you in your work, we could actually go to jail.
Yes.
So the idea is that will protect us from ourselves. We can't talk about that kind of stuff. We certainly aren't going to be poking around in sensitive information. And if we know sensitive information that we're entitled to, we're not going to spread it to people who are not entitled to that information. And the penalty for that is, again, termination and in some cases, jail.
Yeah, deprivation of my liberty.
Yeah. Yeah, not only would I lose my job and my reputation, but also, you know, my freedom. So we take these things very seriously. Now, if we uncovered massive corruption in our organization, then you have a decision to make. Again, luckily I have never had to face this decision, but the decision is, you know, is dropping a dime on a corrupt institution worth whatever consequences you face? Like, if I work at a restaurant and they are buying trouser shrimp, right? Shoplifted seafood and keeping them in a unsanitary circumstance and possibly causing people to get sick.
I think trouser shrimp means something else, by the way, but I see what you're going for.
That's my porn name. Then, you know, if you work for the restaurant, maybe you do phone up the health department and say, hey, you need to come and do a surprise inspection because this is some bullshit. People are going to get hurt. And you know what? If it turns out if your boss finds out, you will definitely get fired. And if your boss has any kind of weight in the community, you might not get another restaurant job in that city. But at least you'll be clear of conscience. And you can say, sure, I did it. I'll do it again. And you get to be a martyr for it if you like. You can be the face of food safety if you'd like. But again, I think Chelsea Manning did not do a wise thing and deserved to go to jail for the thing that she did. But did some good come of it? I think so. Sure.
Do you think had she not come outed herself, as it were, that she should have just been left alone? We shouldn't have pursued finding out who?
Oh, no. I mean, it's in the government's interest to find out who is leaking sensitive military documents. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, again, if someone sees something, you know, you see something, you say something, right? That's the other thing is that part of your own personal integrity is if you see an illegal thing, no matter where you work, you're supposed to, because if you don't report it, then you are now contributing to it, right? So if you see something that's illegal or immoral,
in some of our jobs, we are required to report such things, regardless. Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you weren't required legally, you could definitely be required
morally.
Yeah,
right. I agree.
Again, just a matter of personal integrity. Is that look? You're not going to stand by and watch something illegal happen or something that's wrong. You know, it's like you are required as a member of organizations and just sometimes just as a citizen to follow a lawful order, but you are not required to follow an illegal order. In fact, you're strongly discouraged from it. It doesn't matter if your boss tells you to do something that's illegal. Don't do that thing. You know, don't be a party to a war crime. Report the war crime. It's hard to do. Again, that's the whistleblower thing. That's the you know, piercing, dropping a dime on your buddy. That's where integrity really comes into play. That's where, like in policing, it's a big deal. If you see another police officer break the law or abuse the power, you need to tell somebody about that. Because if you don't, then that is going to continue. It's going to rub off on you, but it's also going to continue because if that doesn't get nipped in the bud, that could lead to, I don't know, things like police agencies who have officers that are doing murders for hire at work. Because you wouldn't want to do a murder of hire off the clock because you're not getting paid. You're not going to take your own car. You're going to use the city's gas to go and commit your gangland murder or your money laundering, drug dealing, whatever. Or your abuse on vulnerable populations. These are all bad things. We should be against them. So it does take brave people to step forward and say, we are doing bad things. If Chelsea Manning had said, hey, I just saw this video of us like intentionally sending one of those Apache helicopters to just fucking decimate this group of people who turned out to be reporters, and then laughing about it or clapping ourselves on the back for a job well done, and turns out this is probably a war crime, then that's where, you know, sure, but you have to report it up your chain of command. You can't just dump it into basically a foreign website. So, you know, if you do that second thing, you deserve to get arrested and convicted of it.
Yeah, no, nowhere does it say that doing the right thing will be the easy thing.
No.
Nope. Or the safe thing.
No, and sometimes, you know, like, that's the thing is, you know, if you're a martyr, the thing about the thing about being a martyr is it doesn't usually end well for you.
Yeah, sometimes being a martyr means that it's a great expense to yourself.
Yeah. So, and we live in a world where I strongly believe it's always been like this, but now it is just so apparent that there are laws, but there are no rules. Things that we thought were rules written in pen were merely suggestions and quaint
notions.
Notions, yes. Quaint cultural customs or, modes of convenience. Things that we thought were foundational in our belief system.
Yeah, it turns out not so much.
No. Nope. So, we're living in interesting times. Not always interesting good, but we've had interesting worst. But yeah, so Julian Assange, if he ends up being extradited to the United States to face charges of espionage, I guess, it could be a huge fight about, you know, and it could be have consequences that could restrict journalistic freedom, which would be a bad thing. Like, there are things that are written in pen, and the Constitution is one of them. And yes, the Constitution also allowed slavery for a long time. So, you know, it's a living document, right? But I think freedom of speech, freedom of the press, these things are pretty much as foundational as you can get. You know, it was merely suggested that we have the pursuit of happiness, but it's mandated that we have freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And again, freedom of speech doesn't mean that you won't be held accountable for your actions by society. It means you shouldn't be accountable by the government.
Yeah. Freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom of consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. There'll always be consequences. Well, there should. Everything should have consequences. Good things and bad things.
Yeah. I wish consequences for more people that open their mouth actually, you know, took effect. But
well, we live in a time where it's easy to open your mouth and it goes on your permanent record. So I'm very lucky that I'm older than, because when I was younger, I was, let's say I had less discretion.
Well, I certainly was not as thoughtful or introspective as I am now, because nowadays I will type out big, long, angry screeds on Facebook and then just hit cancel.
Oh, yeah.
Never post it, because I'm like, you know, this is only going to make people more pissed, and I'm not going to feel better about it, and they're going to get butt hurt, and it's not worth it.
Yeah, there was a thing that I overheard a conversation. I guess I was like tertiarily involved in the conversation, but not really. It was just happening in a bigger context in the room I was in. And it was about this thing on Facebook where someone was advocating for the rights of one group of people. And so a person that we all respect came into the room and they're like, "Hey, come and talk to us. Yeah. This friend of yours on Facebook is against what we're for. Like, what the fuck is wrong with that person?" And the guy who we all respect was, the reason why we all respect him is because he says things like this. He's like, "Oh, I have a plenty nice working relationship with this person. We're friendly, but I don't believe everything he believes. Who knows what he was trying to say? He could be a complete moron."
Like, there's lots of people that don't have the same views that I do, and I don't wish harm upon them. I sometimes wish for them to help me try and understand their point of view, because I don't. And I strive for that. I want to see their point, because sometimes I'm like, I don't think you've thought this through. And I understand that you think I'm smarmy and self-congratulatory, but I want to understand how you got to where you're at, because there's no way I can get there.
Oh,
so
you're more noble than I am most of the time. Most of the time, I don't want to understand your fucking problem. I want you to understand why you're wrong.
Well, I think in the back of my mind, though, I don't cede or concede that I'm wrong. Rather, I just I'm like, how did you get to where you're so wrong? But I don't say that. You know, there's a couple instances where I just am like, I see things or hear things, and I just have to think, wow, how did that ever happen in your head? And why did you feed it oxygen? Because not a good move. But then again, you know, I also work in a highly politically charged environment, so I have to be very careful sometimes, because it seems to be that most of the people in my organization are very leaning one way, but there's a couple people that are very clearly not. And the people that are very clearly not feel very marginalized at times, and that presents some challenges.
Exactly. Well, and you live in a more politically charged society than I do. Community. I mean, granted, everybody has their own political opinions, but you live in a far lefter city than I do. My city is a fairly red city. So us blue bloods kind of keep it under wraps for the most part and agree that all these old racist fuckers will die eventually or whatever.
Yeah.
One, the nice thing about being old, and now I feel really old, is that in fact, a person at work, somehow we were looking at old pictures. And so I pulled up my old, photo lineup of myself. And it starts like at 1983 and goes through 2003. And so it's the various phases of Eric, which involves my Jack Black phase and my Weird Al phase and my Pablo Escobar phase, whatever. But one of my coworkers is like, "You're older than I thought." I said, "Well, you know, I was younger in this picture." She goes, "No, you could be my dad." That's another reason why we don't go on to 23andMe without thinking those things through first. Like, you only have your mom's word for any of this, kiddo. So it's like, yeah, great. So, are we on to housekeeping? Housekeeping. I'll confess that I haven't seen the Dark Crystal trailer yet, and I think we should wait till Drew gets on the podcast to talk about it.
I haven't watched it either, which will fill Drew with white hot apoplectic rage, I suspect. And here's the other thing. I don't really like the Dark Crystal, so I'm not really as jazzed about this as Drew is. So I'm totally happy for his enthusiasm. I don't share it, but I will absolutely foster and feed his enthusiasm. So I will defer to him. So it can be a double feature with the Dark Crystal and Hobbs and Shaw.
So. Yeah. Okay. So question for you: when you were young, because we are, turns out the older we get, the closer we are in age. When we were young, one of the things I remember, one of my favorite parts of watching TV, especially like on Saturday, Sunday night, or whatever, was scenes from next week. Like, I don't know if the Love Boat had it, but certainly Fantasy Island had it. And, probably the Wonderful World of Disney or whatever had it, like, or Charlie's Angels probably had it, where they showed like a little scene from next week.
Oh yeah. Plenty of shows teased.
Yeah. Did you like that?
Did I like that?
So I guess the answer is you didn't like I did, because I looked forward to scenes from next week. Like, I would want to stay up to see scenes from next week, even though the show is over and we've been told it's bedtime already. It wasn't just a plea to stay up 5 minutes later like my daughter would have us. It was really a desire to see scenes from next week.
I think I took them for granted, probably.
Because I think maybe Drew has the same reaction to trailers. Drew is a trailer file.
Yeah, I see people lose their shit for trailers, and I don't get it. Part of that maybe, though, too, that I worked at a movie theater, and that ruined a lot of the splendor for me. Because all that behind-the-scenes stuff just kind of grates on you after a while. So,
I wonder because I don't want to be too pointed at Drew either, but I wonder if part of it is you get off on the anticipation of it. Because the anticipation of Hobbs and Shaw has to be better than the actuality of Hobbs and Shaw, right?
Well, I think it depends on what expectation you go into it with, though, too. I think if you go into it with the expectation it will be no better than the trailer, then you won't be disappointed. It'll be fine.
But I think Drew loves the trailer so much, he has to be disappointed by the movie, doesn't he? Isn't it like almost a self-fulfilling prophecy?
No, I think he lowers expectations enough to realize that the movie will not be as good as the trailer.
I hope so. Because it seems like you're chasing the dragon, then you're riding so high on this trailer. And then when you see the movie, and if it turns out to be less than you expected, or the trailer was just giving you the 6 highlights of a very boring movie or whatnot, then you'll be like, ugh.
Yeah. I that's why I don't like trailers. It's the same reason why oftentimes I don't like music videos, because I don't want the content spoiled for me prematurely. I want to experience it on my own first before I get some. So
I don't know. Like
a trailer has never spurred me to go see a movie. Either I'm going to go see that movie or not. The trailer has absolutely no gravity for me.
Oh no! That's how I would say, oh, I want to see this, is from seeing the trailer. Because otherwise, what am I looking at, a poster?
I read either reviews or I read about the story, but usually I don't even read reviews. I read about what it's about, and then I decide on the basis of what it's about. The trailer isn't going to compel me either way, because the trailer is somebody's point of view of what they want you to see in the movie, and that may not even be the best parts of the movie. So
no, it's supposed to be a tease, though. It shouldn't give you the best parts. It should just give you...
But sometimes...
It's whet your appetite.
Yeah, but that doesn't work on me.
You're not wettable? You can't be whetened.
I'm dark and broken, clearly.
But it's like if you're just chasing the dragon from trailer to trailer, trying to get the next thing. Pretty soon you're skipping through just to hear the solo or just to hear the chorus. And then a question for you. So there's an Alaska band called Portugal the Man.
Oh, yes.
And they have that song.
They have lots of songs.
Well, their one big popular song. Was it Feel It Still or something?
Well, that was one of them, but yeah.
Well, I think I've discovered one of the reasons that song is so catchy is because it's all chorus. It's not verse, chorus, verse. It's just chorus, chorus, chorus. I mean, it's not a song per se. It's more like a jingle, which is, again, it's catchy.
No, I don't know. Tidal Wave is a song I listen to a lot right now from them. So,
yeah, haven't heard it, but
There's an older song from them that was really, 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 really popular for a while too, that I really enjoyed. And of course, the name escapes me, but.
Back to music videos, just because we're just wildly ranging. Like music videos made some songs so much better.
Sometimes.
I can go down a YouTube rabbit hole watching videos, just live performances of, you know, bands like Trio doing Anna or Da Da Da, because watching it happen or watching the story they're telling with the video is part of the experience. Like how could we have listened? Like there's no reason to listen to all those Aerosmith ballads of the 90s other than Alicia Silverstone. Why do we care? Maybe Liv Tyler too, I suppose. But it was all Alicia Silverstone.
there's two things about music videos for me. One is the literal music video, like Men at Work. Their videos are literal. They are just absolute literal representations of the lyrics. Whether or not the lyrics make sense.
Acting out the stories?
Yes.
So yes. There's Women Glow and Men Chundering?
Sure. and then there are like story videos that don't even necessarily have anything to do with the song, but are trying to give you a story. It's Hozier, like Hozier. I think it's Hozier. Take me to church. Is that the song? If you watch the music video for that, it is chilling. It is a chilling video. It is some strange black and white, war crime kind of video. And it's very powerful.
Oh, sometimes a video can ruin a song.
Sure. But sometimes also a video has nothing to do with the song. Well, yeah, but it's still good.
Okay. What about Pearl Jam's Jeremy?
Eh.
I mean, the video makes it more powerful. It's just telling the story. It's not.
You think it does?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's black and white and stark and sad at the end.
I felt very patronized by the video.
Okay, maybe it was meant for a simpler mind like myself.
I'm just saying, for me, like when I saw the video, I was like, I already got this from the song. Like, you really needed it. Became a literal video to me. No, like, but, you really needed to spell it out.
But you had heard the song and then you saw the video. But if the first time you heard the song was watching the video, like if the video led you to the song, it would be more powerful.
I can understand that. No, I heard the video the song like hundreds of times because it was on that Stanley album.
Yeah, exactly. No, that was Alive that was on the Stanley album.
Oh, right. I think that I must have got the album because of Alive, and that's where I heard it.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
You're right. You're right. This is what happens when we get old. This is why we can self-reference each other.
Yeah, well, and I mean, yeah, so there's just weird imagery for weird imagery's sake. I think Def Leppard's Pyromania has like a toaster and like chess pieces and stuff for no reason.
U2 Lemon.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's my go-to. By the way, I love the song and I love the video. The video has nothing to do with the song. And exactly. It is nuts and I love it.
Yeah.
Depeche Mode's video for Wrong, I think the song is Wrong, is nuts. It is crazy, batshit crazy, and I love it. But it is crazy nuts.
Well, what about like Sledgehammer?
Yeah.
I mean, that's another one. Goofy. Or any of those, Frank Zappa claymation ones.
But the Sledgehammer Peter Gabriel was very 80s. That was a very 80s thing. You know, the little claymation, whimsical kind of... Was it whimsy or was it twee?
Well, and it's part of an art piece. You know, it's like mm-hmm. Talking Heads. Like, Talking Heads are not just singing songs. They're doing an art piece while you're there, you know? You know, Frank Zappa is going off the rails in the same way, actually, that Dave Matthews does. Oh, so I don't know if you saw on Facebook, but there was a game that Tracy put on there that I copied from her. And I haven't seen it very much since, but it was basically put down like six concerts you've been to and a seventh that you haven't. And the goal is to pick the ones you haven't. And so when people say, oh, well, you've never seen U2. I'm like, nope, I saw U2 in Portland in 2001, whatever, you know? And then it's like, somebody said Dave Matthews. I'm like, oh no, Dave Matthews is the last concert I saw. And that's because I was having like a 3-day panic attack. And it was a shit concert anyway. And I'm so bitter about it to this day. The music videos are just an extension of the theater of live performance too, because you know when you can listen to Elton John sing a song at a piano, and he's done plenty of concerts where he's just dressed in a suit, comes out to the piano, just him and a piano and a mic, and he does a nice little thing, and everybody's happy about it. But sometimes he's wearing a Donald Duck suit. And sometimes, you know, Britney Spears is lip syncing along to a song and doing a lot of dancing because you're there for the theater experience. You're not necessarily there for the song being performed live. Like, we've both seen bands that are kind of crap live. Like, I saw Ozzy Osbourne in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the guy could ever sing, but he certainly was having a lot of trouble singing. You know, his voice would break quite a bit, which again, he's not doing a lot of heavy lifting anyway, but he was fine. You know, also his stage patter, was not Alice Cooper-esque, or even like Dave Matthews-esque, where you can see his feet move as he's grooving into the mic. No, he did a lot of, like, when he wasn't singing, he was doing jumping jacks and like clapping along, which I suppose in like 1973 would be good to get the audience going. But when you're sitting in like a, you know, 10,000 seat, basically sports arena, having him do like, jumping jacks to get the crowd going, this old fat guy is like, that's not necessary. You know, there's no pyrotechnics like Metallica where they're going to shoot off shit that's going to burn the actual musicians, you know, or, you know, U2's going to have the stripped down version that I saw was where, you know, they just had the heart shaped like stage thrust. But you know, Drew got to see the gigantic lemon disco ball. That's all part of the stagecraft. None of that is necessarily the song. You don't get anything more out of Mysterious Ways by seeing the big old lemon ball. Or maybe you do. I don't know. Can we separate performance? Did I tell you a story about AC/DC and what Journey said?
Sure.
My daughter is hilarious. So I'm still dinking around, like learning stuff on the three-string guitar. Mm-hmm. And one of the songs that I thought would be fun to learn is Thunderstruck by AC/DC. And the cool thing about Akadaka is that AC/DC songs are very simple. The lyrics are simple. The chords are simple. They're all very simple. The thing about Thunderstruck, though, is it starts with these like runs. Hammer-ons, I guess, you know, so it's basically like this really fast guitar fingering. And I guess I can put in a little snippet of it here. So we were in the car and I was going to play it for Journey and say, hey, you know, listen to the song. And she's like, why are we listening to this? I'm like, well, cause I'm trying to learn it on the guitar and I think it's kind of cool. And so she listens and she's like, huh, okay, well, we don't have to listen to it anymore. Right. I'm like, you don't like it? She goes, nah, not really. Okay, fine. I was like, and I think you're going to need more than three strings. It's like, shut up. I could do it on one string. You don't even know. But the other one I'm learning is actually just on one string. The other two strings are just for show during this part. That's fine. I think you're going to need more than three strings, Dad. Like,
ah, kid. Well, and now it begins.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's like, I will make fun of her. I think tomorrow while she's at Grandma's house, I will. We're going to try to clean out her room a little bit. Move things around. And Julie at work, I had put out a call about 6 months ago for people who had guitars they didn't want and haunted dolls. And I didn't come up with any guitars except that I was led to look online and I ended up buying two guitars online from Craigslist through a Craigslist intermediary. But Julie at work brought in a haunted doll.
What?
It's just a creepy doll that her daughter thinks is so creepy that she would like wants it just kept in the closet or gotten rid of. It's like a doll with like a bisque porcelain face or whatever. But it's also it plays music. You wind it up and it plays Edelweiss or
that's creepy.
On Germany Uber Alles or whatever.
I doubt that it plays Germany Uber Alles. Even the Germans don't do that.
So Julie brought it in today finally. And I had wound it up, and it was playing Edelweiss, and we were talking a little bit about that, and the fact that I hate that sound of music, even though I've never seen the movie, and it's because I don't like Julie Andrews or Nazis, and that has to do with Mary Poppins. And anyway, so it was just sitting there on my desk, that's not just minding its own business, this doll. And then Kara gets a call of a shooting. And immediately it starts playing Edelweiss just on its own. And Kara has to turn and say, shut that off, you know, because it was she couldn't hear her caller. So I had to take the doll to the other side of the room because I couldn't shut it off because it's a wind-up doll. And I couldn't get it to stop, even though I hadn't wound it up. So you tell me it's not haunted. So Journey's going to be so angry because I'm just going to put it in her room. Dolls anyway. So
you were a little bit of evil. You're creating future therapy. You're starting a business for Dr. Wonders.
I'm just having a little fun being a dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go in the middle of the night and wind it up and tell her it's haunted. It's too small to make a guitar out of. I was going to make a guitar out of it and put the guitar neck in a sort of obscene place. But, it's too small. If it were slightly bigger, it'd be easier, but it's not worth it.
This is a surreal conversation.
A little bit. So anyway, do you have housekeeping?
We discussed that boyfriend Jesse and I went and saw John Wick the Third at one of our favorite movie theaters, Cinetopia, which is at Progress Ridge in Beaverton, because we get assigned seats and it's 21 and over only, and they've just generally they're an upscale kind of movie theater. And the fact that we went opening night was unusual. Well, it turns out they closed the following week.
Oh, yeah.
And they were bought out by AMC.
Well, I think that'll be good for you, though, right?
Well, I don't know, because they've already said, yeah, we're not going to do, like, because Cinetopia has three theaters, three or four in the local area. And then, inexplicably, there's one in Overland Park, Kansas. I don't know why. So they said that they're going to not do the same thing that they were doing as Cinetopia. So except at the one location, they might keep serving food kind of in one of the locations, but I don't know. It'll change it a great deal. So that's, we're kind of like, I was kind of bummed about that because I'm resistant to go to movies if I think that there's going to be a bunch of hooligans or people who are going to talk. I just have a hard time with movies anymore at movie theaters because I just want to kill people.
Yeah, I agree. And they're so expensive.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a thing. If we go to the movies, it's a that's what we do for the day kind of thing. It's not like before where we're like, let's go out to dinner and go see a movie. And like, no. We will eat dinner and then we will go see a movie somewhere. But I'm not going out to eat and then taking you to a movie because that requires a mortgage.
Exactly.
And then the other thing is we're kind of ramping up to come up to Alaska for our trip that's coming up for Dad's retirement. And
what are we going to do? Have we decided?
No one's decided anything. I went last weekend up to Stan's place and got all the car parts, including the new rear bumper.
Sweet.
Which is too big to ship.
What do you mean it's too big to ship?
The U.S. Postal Service won't take it. It's too long.
Yeah, so you'll have to ship it like through a private shipping company? Like on a barge or something? Or a specialty shipper? A palletized load?
FedEx and UPS want about $700 to ship it.
Isn't there like some sort of packing company that will ship it like literally on a palletized freight?
There is, which is what I will be doing.
Okay.
Which means I have to drive it to Auburn, Washington.
Sweet. Road trip.
So I get to, well, it's a road trip, but they're not open on the weekends.
So it's a take off the workday road trip.
And they're open from 6 a.m. to 1 p.m.
So it's a early morning sick day road trip.
And it's 4 hours of drive. So
yeah,
I think it's actually 3 hours of driving. So I was telling boyfriend Jesse, I said, well, we have a couple options. We can get up at the butt crack of dawn and drive up there and drop it off and come back. That's going to be a pretty long, exhausting day, 6 hours of driving, cranky pants. And I said, or in theory, we could go up on Thursday night and spend the night somewhere and then drop it off first thing in the morning and then make our way back leisurely.
Yeah, there we go.
Because he gets cheap rates because he works for the hotel. So like we can get a room for like $50.
That's sweet. Perfect. Which sold.
He's like, well, I don't want to waste all my time and weekend. I'm like, we're not. Look, we have to go. I have to go up there anyway.
Is spending time together wasting your weekend?
I didn't pull that card. I wasn't going to do that. But so anyway, it's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't know what we're doing. But anyway, I have this giant bumper that I get to transport. And don't get me wrong, I'm happy to do it. I volunteered for it when Dad was like, I don't know, I'm going to ship it. I'm like, well, we will get it to you. So that's what we're doing. But otherwise, car-wise, I don't know what else to do. Retirement or birthday wise, and for all those, you know, also Father's Day is coming up in a couple weeks, so
yeah,
so it's like, oh my god. And then what else is going on?
I'm excited that I will actually have some days off while you're here so that we could actually do like a podcast together. Like I can bring the kit out to your parents' house and we can actually like set it up and record it all there. We could do a live commentary of a movie if you want.
Yeah. Or I could get my ass together and we could do some ASMR stuff.
Okay, I'll get my letter opener and I will open this letter. And it's gonna go.
That just sounds like you're murdering somebody. Is that a block of chocolate?
It's an empty block of chocolate thing. It's chili chocolate. Oh, let me tell you. Okay, so I've been trying to do much better. My blood sugar is so much better now that I'm actually paying attention to what I'm eating and not eating shit or crap or candy, basically. I'm a candy fiend, and if I decide fuck it, then I just eat whatever I want. But I haven't been. I've been very, very good. But to satiate my sweet tooth, I have come across, and it's weird because it turns out this is what Penn Jillette did too. I've been eating blueberries with a tiny splash of milk, frozen blueberries, tiny splash of milk. So when you stir it around, it becomes like an ice milk kind of thing. But it's just like a little bit of milk and a ton of blueberries. And then cinnamon, just raw cinnamon. But I've eaten like, I don't know, in the last month, I've probably eaten maybe 25 pounds of blueberries. And eating a whole bunch of blueberries, while very satisfying, it has lots of fiber and stuff. So it's, you know, it's of all the fruit, the berries are, I think, the best for you. And like I said, they must have a pretty low glycemic load because it's my blood sugar is better than ever. But it's like eating beets. If you forgot that you've eaten a whole bunch of blueberries, it could be alarming later if you're going to the bathroom and look down the toilet and think, oh, coffee ground color poo is not a good idea. Wait, those aren't coffee grounds. And it's not black. It's more deep purple. So. Thought I'd share. Eventually I'll be sick of blueberries, but it hasn't happened yet.
You know, the funny thing is boyfriend Jesse and I have this thing about breakfast cereal where I'm very, like, I like breakfast cereal. I don't eat a lot of it anymore because it's terrible for you. And
yeah, it is.
Now I'm on the intermittent fasting thing, so I'm only eating for that 8-hour window. So breakfast isn't, I usually don't eat till noon. Noon to 8, that's my window. But on the weekends, you know, I will have breakfast cereal because I'll be at home. So every now and then I'll have breakfast cereal. But so sometimes at the grocery store, we'll see new things. I'll be like, I'm not even going to try that. That doesn't even appeal to me. And there's always these weird things that boyfriend Jesse wants to try, like these.
Like strawberry chocolate Captain Crunch?
That wasn't good. I didn't like that.
I thought it was okay.
Nah. What was the other thing that was fruity Lucky Charms? Yeah,
no,
that wasn't good.
You know what I like Frosted Flakes with the marshmallows in them, but that is like the most sugar you can get. I might as well just cut off my foot now.
I can't abide those styrofoam marshmallows. When I eat them, it hurts my soul.
I've bought just a container of those marshmallows. You can buy them.
that explains a great deal. The chocolate frosted flakes, actually, I have quite an affinity for, but they make cinnamon ones, and I cannot eat cinnamon and milk. There is something about the combination of cinnamon and milk that I really viscerally, I just do not enjoy it. There's something about it.
Omit the sugar. Just put straight cinnamon and milk. First of all, it's hard to mix up. And B, throw some blueberries in it and you're going to have a good time.
It's something with the creamy and the cinnamon does not work with me. I don't like it. There's something about it. And I, cause
do you not like cinnamon frosting?
I'm not a big cinnamon frosting guy. And I like you cinnamon
frosting on cinnamon rolls, but not
right. That's
how about
fine.
Cinnamon toast? Are you a cinnamon toast fan?
Not really. I mean,
what are we once even doing here?
once in a while, you know, I will have that nostalgic childhood thing. But you know, I had that bad grinder incident where one of my grinders looks like cinnamon sugar. They both look like cinnamon sugar, but one's actually like pepper blend.
Ah, yeah.
Well, that's so there's that. But
sorry to interrupt. I was eating granola, and I was just throwing a bunch of raw cinnamon on top. Except that the shaker I had wasn't cinnamon. It was paprika.
Oh, dear.
So that was a little bit of a shock.
That would be jarring.
Not bad, just a shock.
But anyway, yeah, cinnamon and milk, like cinnamon ice cream. Like, I can't get with that. The only real cinnamon thing that I like is cinnamon in French toast is good.
Oh, yeah.
But cinnamon on waffles, no. Cinnamon and pancakes, no.
Cinnamon and nutmeg and vanilla and French toast are my favorite things.
Altogether, you mean?
Yes.
Actually, I have a recipe.
Eggs and a little bit of milk.
Yeah, I have a recipe for really good French toast to make the batter where you mix it all together like that. So
Yes.
And it comes out really like sinfully good, which
yeah, is bad, and so. I think like baked French toast is good too, like a French toast casserole. It has to be super soaked though. It's more like a bread pudding.
I don't like that. I don't like that mushy, soggy. Bleh. I like my French toast a little firmer and
a little bit al dente.
No, I just don't like I don't like moist egg products.
If you cook it all the way through, you could sous vide some French toast.
So the thing about the sous vide is difficult is that texturally, it kind of breaks your brain a little bit.
As far as
things are cooked, but they don't look cooked necessarily, and they are damp. Yes, they retain all of the moisture. So
eggs probably freaks you out.
Eggs were actually okay because you cook them you just put the eggs in the water bath. You don't have to do anything with them. So they cook actually pretty decently. But things like pork chops.
Oh, okay. They're still like the fat is still like glisteny white.
Well, pork chops are pretty lean, so not really. But the thing is, they don't really, so they don't get any color to them when they cook because they're not cooking; they're sous videing. So.
Oh, Mr. Maillard, where are you?
So yeah, so you have to brown them, which is a very delicate art because you can easily overcook them at that point because they're already fully cooked.
Yes.
So you have to flash brown them.
Cook them as hot and as fast as you can.
Yes, which is also how you end up with things like, you know, like smoke bombs in your kitchen.
No,
like
which you need to take out of the garage and
a plasma torch.
No, I was thinking acetylene would be just fine, right? I mean, you could just.
I don't think acetylene is food grade. I think you would get sick if you ate acetylene cooked food. I think so.
Wouldn't just burn off?
I don't think all of it does burn off, though, as I think you get some chemical dissipation onto the food, which is why you're not supposed to use acetylene torches in kitchens. You're supposed to use, like, butane, because butane is cleaner.
Well, so you could just do a quick old butane thing. You could brûlée your pork chops.
I do have a Brûlé torch, although it's actually like a crack torch. But
you can throw sugar on it and brew really blue Brûlé it. you could crack the shell of your freaking pork chop. An inch thick pork chop with a shell you have to crack? Oh my god.
That does not sound appealing.
Oh, like apple sugar. It's like pork chops and applesauce right there. I'm telling you, you know, you gotta do it. Got to do it. If you put if you make a reduction of apple juice, like apple syrup almost, and then paint it on the outside and then torch it up. Oh, that'd be so good. Also, have you thought of, so one of the best parts of meatloaf is that the ketchup gets a almost ketchup jerky texture on the outside of it, right?
What the hell are you doing to meatloaf?
No, I mean, do you ever have meatloaf that has ketchup on the top?
I don't put ketchup on the top.
Okay, because if you put ketchup or a sauce, it could be any sauce. I understand.
It caramelizes.
It caramelizes. I want to make just that disc of ketchup. Like on a Silpat or something where you just put it in the oven and make ketchup jerky.
Why don't you just use a food dehydrator?
Exactly. I don't have a food dehydrator. Otherwise, I would.
You have an air fryer, though. I think you can actually...
Probably low temperature.
I think you can actually accomplish that because they work in some cases as a food dehydrator.
Yeah, I think maybe you're right.
I'm not sure how that works, but why? Yeah, why? What is it? Why wouldn't you just go for balsamic vinegar at that point?
No, sun dried tomatoes, right? Sun dried tomatoes, if you're not in oil, have that really super sweet taste to them. Because they're just the tomato that's dried. You can do the same thing in an air fryer, except with with ketchup instead. So it's nice and sugary and tomato-y. And to me, balsamic a little goes a long way.
I'm not a huge balsamic fan. And Mom sent me a picture of some balsamic sauce she got from somewhere. She's like, this is awesome. And I'm like... Yeah, that wouldn't fly in my house. So I appreciate that, but that's never going to happen.
I brought Mom some. We bought this honey butter from the Saturday marketplace we went to, and it's five ingredients: coconut oil.
Really, you'd think it was honey and butter?
No, it's coconut oil. It's peanut butter, organic peanut butter, coconut oil, coconut pieces, honey. And Himalayan sea salt, just a little bit of that. And some cocoa powder maybe, right? And it's Journey loves the stuff. And it's really good on a cracker or something. I mean, you can put it on whatever you want, but, it's really sweet. But Mom took one taste and was like, oh, you can keep that forever. did you taste her honey? Her hippie honey?
I'm sorry, what?
They got some honey from their neighbor's napier or something, or their friends, whatever. And she's like, you got to try this honey. It's the best. And it's like, oh, to me, it had this taste of patchouli. It's like, I don't want no hippie honey. It's gross. And she was appalled. I'm like, no.
My first question would be, has it been pasteurized?
Don't know. Don't care. Not eating any more of it.
Yeah. No. Hopefully. I don't. So my roommate.
No, wait, isn't honey a super, super antibiotic food?
I'm pretty sure that if honey's not processed, you can end up with some bad things.
I want to say it's one of nature's perfect antibiotic foods. I could be wrong.
I think that's an old wives' tale.
Okay.
But I'm no honey expert.
Kudos to you guys for blowing the lid off of royal jelly.
The conspiracy
of royal jelly.
I don't recall that that's what we did. So
did you listen to the episode?
Has it? Oh, did you release it this weekend?
Is Mr. Holmes?
Oh no, I didn't see it after the other one. So
oh no, there's I released two. Mr. Holmes actually. Drew says, "Do you believe in royal jelly?" And you're like, "No, I don't." Yeah, I mean, and then you moved on. It's like, what do you not believe in royal jelly? So I had to look it up. Well, is the existence of it the problem? It's
not that I don't believe. All right. It's not that I don't believe that it exists. It's that I don't believe it has some magical property that it's going
to. But you guys never touched on magical properties. You just, the question was one of existence.
But that's what, so my answer was not complete is the problem there. So.
I guess. I was like, what? Like, I actually did like a triple take.
Like, but no, that was not what I meant. So my answer was not complete there. But no, my roommate brought home a giant, and when I say giant, I mean like a Costco-sized glass mayonnaise jar full of honey from one of his coworkers, somebody distant relatives. And I'm like, first of all, I couldn't use that much honey in a lifetime. Exactly. Second of all, it doesn't look right. There's something not right about that. It's probably not filtered.
Probably not, yeah.
Also, I think the stuff in it, the stuff floating in it, is, I think, bee parts, which I also don't want to eat. I don't want to put it in my mouth. And then when I opened it up, it smelled like... it smelled like garbage juice.
Okay. The honey that mom gave me did not, it smelled like honey. It was fine. It just had a taste of patchouli. Like the bees were like just got off the, got home from the Grateful Dead wavy gravy concert.
honey will take on the flavor of what the bees are pollinating. So,
well, exactly. That's the point. So it's like, get rid of your hippie honey.
Patchouli would be the worst. That's like...
it's the strongest, nastiest smell. Like, you know, like my mom still thinks that she always tells me, you know, you're not the only one that thinks cilantro tastes like soap. It's a real thing. I'm like, what do you mean? Of course it's a real thing. What do you think? I was making it up the whole time? She goes, no, but I mean, it's a real thing. Other people, like... Okay, you think it's like a Ziploc thing. You don't even believe in that. So... maybe you've just been humoring me my whole life. Now you find out that I'm not wrong.
The reason that I can't stand patchouli is because all the pot-smoking hippies think that patchouli masks the scent of pot. No, now you smell like this really cloyingly awful floral fragrance with the nasty skankweed pot that you're smoking. So now you smell doubly bad.
I think patchouli just wipes out all of your nostrils. Like for me, it's just a... carpet bombing of my sense of smell, so it's very unpleasant.
I wish that it had that effect with me. I just
no, it's so gross.
I don't like patchouli either.
Yeah, it's also like it's to me. It's like the taste of rosemary. Rosemary will wipe out my whole taste palate in a gross way. I hate rosemary.
I don't have that problem, but you know, I live fairly close to some fucking hippies who grow this shit ton of weed. So there are times of the year that I can't even open my windows.
Yeah.
Because my house would just ridiculous. Reek of nasty skunk ass. It smells like dog shit is what it smells like.
It smells like skunk, yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? Like, why? First of all, why do you think this is something that you want to smoke? It smells like dead rancid skunk ass. Like, what kind of weird fucks are you? Anyway, yeah.
Come on, you don't want to do sweet sticky nugs, man?
No, I'm not a pot guy. I've never been a pot guy. I smoked pot once, decades ago, and I laughed for about 5 minutes and fell asleep, and that was it. I'm like, you know what? This is not worth it. I would rather eat chocolate because it doesn't smell or taste bad.
Again, this is another place where my work just benefits me, keeps me away from things that would be bad anyway, because. Hey, we had a download from the Ivory Coast. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay.